Good Vach, this is Yisachar Wartel, and we are now up to Parshat Vayeshev. That's right, working our way. Next week we'll be Miketz and talk about Hanukkah. But for right now, we're going to be sticking to the Parsha. So in last week's Parsha, Yaakov met and struggled with a strange man who most commentaries explain as Esau's ministering angel, and paralleled an internal struggle. Now, Yaakov had been blessed with much wealth, and although he'd gone through many ordeals, he did come through richer and better than before. Yet he still had a lingering attachment to the physical world, which is something we kind of explained last week. So this is actually a continuation of last week. So I don't want to repeat myself too much, but I'm not sure how many people had heard it. So basically, he had fought with Tsar Esav and became Yisrael, which was like the master. And he became a master of mastering physical things and connecting it to the spirituality. And he mastered that little part of himself, which was maybe a little overtly physical, and became a fully spiritual entity. I mean, obviously, he was still physical, so to speak, but, you know, he was able to tap in fully to the spiritual side rather than focusing on the physical, although he obviously had both aspects of Yisrael and Yaakov. And we spoke about, you know, Beit El and El Beit El being surrounded by the power of God. But in this week's Parsha, begins with a slightly different frame of reference. Vayeshev Yaakov be'aretz Megorei Aviv be'aretz Kanaan. Why Yaakov and not Yisrael, right? If he had just gone through this amazing heightened state and he was now Yisrael, I mean, yes, there were times he would be Yaakov, but if we're focusing on who he became and this new level that he's at, why wouldn't he be called Yisrael? Why is the Torah referring to him simply as Yaakov? So furthermore, the Kuyakar asks, why use two different terms for seemingly the same thing? It says Vayeshev Yaakov, and he dwelt, really settled, Ba'aretz Megorei Aviv, Be'aretz Kanaan. So it uses the term of Gor, right? Of like, so again, we have to understand the difference between Vayeshev and Gar. And usually Vayeshev indicates a more permanent settling, and Gar is more temporary. Seemingly either one could potentially be fitting in this context. So rather, it must be explained that while Yaakov dwelt in the land, his forefathers, Avraham and Yitzchak, simply lived there. They resided, but were not permanently settled there. But Yaakov wanted to be permanently settled there. Now, Yitzchak was in Eretz Kanaan his whole life, but it wasn't with as much of a sense of permanence. Yaakov wanted to establish a permanence that he and his family would be in Eretz Kanaan eternally, but ultimately it wasn't the case because they would have to go down to Mitzrayim. But it's praiseworthy to want to live permanently in Eretz Yisrael, right? We know that making Aliyah, certainly back then. But Yaakov wanted something else. Like, he had a really difficult life. He had a really difficult, much harder life than Yitzchak, and somewhat of extent a harder life than Avram. Again, that's debatable. But he wanted to just finally settle down, right? So whether or not he knew that the time to come to Mitzrayim was coming soon or not, I don't know. But he wanted to perhaps just settle down and say, enough is enough. I've gone through so much service in my life. I finally made peace with Esav. I'm back home. I need to rest. I'm done with this. Not that he was giving up, right? He wanted to focus on spiritual pursuit. He's not just going to be sitting around the couch all day, you know, just like whatever. But he wanted to sit and spend time with his family, have time to connect with his family, have time to connect to Torah, have time to stop worrying about running around and chasing and spending all night, you know, with love on sheep, whatever it was. Like, he wanted to just engage in the spirituality that he has now gotten so much closer to. Like, he didn't want to have to be struggling with the physical anymore. But Hashem says, not so fast. Don't get complacent. Not that he really was getting complacent, but this is not what I have in mind for you, because your work is not done. And that's why it says Vayeshev Yaakov, because in this case, it was Yaakov, the physical aspect that dominated, asking for a respite to live a life of physical comfort. Maybe not truly, because like, he still wanted to, you know, go have spiritual pursuit and learn and spend time with his family, but he wanted to physically rest. He didn't want to physically struggle anymore. He wanted, in that respect, physical comfort. Now, in most cases, this would more than be justified, right? But Yaakov was on such a high level that he had far too much potential to be able to rest now. Now, we see throughout the remainder of Bereishit that Yaakov is referred to both this name of Yaakov and Yisrael, demonstrating the delicate balance that every Jewish person must struggle with, and that no one can be Yisrael all the time, and conversely, no one should be Yaakov all the time, right? There are times where you do need breaks, and you do need to focus on physical reestablishment, whether it be food, resting, whatever it might be, and there are times where you need to reduce your amount of physical enjoyment or physical contentment and focus on spiritual sacrifice. So they both have to be taken into account. We can take a modern-day analogy to see why Yaakov's place in the Jewish nation's development was so incredibly crucial. When a biological sample is taken to the taken to the lab to be genetically analyzed, it first must be spun down, purified, and the genetic material extracted. Now, the genetic material then has to be further broken down into either DNA or RNA. Only then can replication of genetic material take place and a true understanding of the organism that it actually came from. Avram Avinu was, in a sense, the initial sample. He was chosen as his primary specimen to bring forth the true way of Hashem, but he had to be broken down and purified of Yishmael. Yitzchak was the genetic material. He did not have to be strenuously purified, i.e. heavily tested, but he was not the pure genetic coding either, and he still had to be broken down with Esav removed from his offspring. Yaakov was, in a sense, then the pure DNA of the Jewish nation. All of his children were righteous, and nothing had to be removed from them. Yet this DNA, i.e. Yaakov and his children, had to be carefully scrutinized, de-stranded, amplified, yes, I'm a scientist, and ultimately copied 12 times over, meaning his 12 children. We see that although Yaakov was the perfect one, the nation was really just beginning. In fact, Yaakov maybe misses this point, right? Because we see that he doesn't, in a certain level, you know, obviously we're holding him to very high standards, but on some level, he didn't see all 12 as equal parts. Because he, in a sense, favored Yosef. There were a lot of different reasons the commentaries get into, but he favored Yosef, in a sense, more than the other brothers. And a lot of, even Rav Kanievsky spoke about the danger of favoritism, right? It ultimately led to the disaster. Now, again, Yaakov may have been thinking he was justified, whatever. Again, there's so many things that can be talked about in more detail. But it says, Ela todo Yaakov Yosef. These are the children of Yaakov. He had only lost one child. Yosef was to his father as if he were all of his children himself. Now, again, very debated why Yaakov took such a liking to specifically to Yosef. To some extent, they had a lot of similarities. It's partially because of Rachel. But in Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Gimel, it says that Yisrael, not Yaakov, loved Yosef more than any of his sons. Now, if this favoritism is supposedly so negative, then why is Yaakov called by his more spiritual name here? So Rabbeinu Bechaya asks this question and explains that this wording implies that it was actually Yosef's spiritual greatness that propelled him above the rest. It wasn't true favoritism. And perhaps simply acknowledging and loving one son over the others is not necessarily the problem. The problem was that he demonstrated this in front of the other brothers. Right? It's not so much that he loved or maybe saw more potential in Yosef than the other sons. Right? And in a sense, loved his potential more or loved someone who was like him more. But you don't show that in front of the other brothers. That's where it went wrong. Right? Yaakov loved so much, he made him a striped cloak. And he didn't necessarily give a special gift of this caliber to his brothers. This was a physical demonstration, even though he was coming from a spiritual place. And the brothers saw this, that the higher love for Yosef manifests itself in a physical nature, whereas it should have been a spiritual nature, right? Maybe it could have been a way of learning that was different. But the point is, Yaakov used a physical gift to Yosef different than the rest of his brothers. And that caused them, possibly among other reasons, to resent their brother. And perhaps even their father, to a minor extent. Now, Yosef had now become somewhat of a pawn in Hashem's plan. He was outshining his father's eyes, but quite dark in the eyes of his brothers, right? We know that. So Yosef is given a startling dream, which Yosef has no choice but to tell his brothers, even when it's clear they don't want to hear it. Now, as one would imagine, the brothers now loathe Yosef even more for daring to suggest he would one day rule over them. And to enforce this further, Hashem gives Yosef a second similarly prophetic dream, and once again forcibly relates it to his brothers, and this time also his father. Now, his father quickly reprimands him for this, seemingly to assuage his brothers, who are now so irate they're likely ready to kill him. However, Yaakov was no fool and understood that if this dream manifested itself a second time, even if he didn't understand what it meant, it had to be a true message. He knew it was Emes from Hashem. Yaakov was Emes, and he understood what Emes was. Yaakov must have thought that Yosef's brothers had cooled off somewhat and it was time to make amends, so he sends Yosef off on a seemingly dangerous mission to seek the welfare of his brothers. He had pure motivation, so therefore the Torah now addresses Yosef's father as Yisrael, not Yaakov, because he sought Shalom, right? He sought to fix the mistake that he made and to try and damage what potentially had been done. And he sought to make things whole and pure, right? He said to seek Shalom with your brothers. However, Yosef's brothers were no less perturbed than before, and it's quite likely that they also understood that there might be some divine meaning to his dreams, and they perceived that as a threat, right? They perceived that as a threat to what would become Judaism, right? To their, like, you know, I don't know what exactly what's clear what they considered it, but they didn't think it was compatible with what they were and what they were supposed to be. So he had to quickly be eliminated. And their variety of perplexing events, which ultimately led to the sale of Yosef down to Egypt, the brothers had to cover for his disappearance and return with the physical symbol of Yosef, which was the striped cloak, back to their father. Now Yaakov laments over the loss of his favorite son, and begins a period of intense mourning. And now it says, Vayikra Yaakov Simotav, and Yaakov tore his garment. Grieving is understandable and extremely appropriate in these circumstances. Yet he could not be consoled, not after a month, a year, or as explained, even 22 years. It took Yaakov 22 years to the point where he found out that Yosef was in fact still alive. Only then did he stop mourning. Otherwise, he probably would have mourned indefinitely. Now, it is possibly for this reason that Gemara states that the Shekhinah never visited him these 22 years. Yaakov could not accept the loss of his favorite child. He could not accept that this was Hashem's will. He was so certain, he was a man of emes, he was so certain that Yosef was meant to be perhaps the biggest part of the next generation. And he was focusing on what was physically transpiring on the earth in front of him, that his son was no longer physically in front of him. Even though he had emunah, there was still something that he couldn't figure out how things could play out spiritually. Now, when someone passes away, this feeling of grief is often unbearable, and it does seem like it will endure forever. And the Torah gives us 11, occasionally 12 months, this sense 12 months, but really 11 months to grieve and move on with our lives. We should never forget our loved ones, and it always keeps them in our hearts. And it's never going to be the same. Yet we should also realize that Hashem gives us life as a beautiful but temporary gift, and Hashem can take it back whenever he knows it's the right time. Now Yaakov, after given time to grieve, should have accepted Hashem's will and moved on. Some Chazal say the reason he couldn't move on was because Yosef was really alive, and that's why, you know, but there's another possibility. Maybe he had some kind of guilt, and he couldn't forgive himself. He was well-meaning when he sent Yosef to seek his brothers. But he felt he may have been a little too idealistic when he realized the perils of this. He very well may have suspected the brothers playing a role in Yosef's death. It's not clear. But either way, he couldn't help feeling responsible. Because ultimately, that's when he saw him last. He sent him out into the field and never saw him again. Well, 22 years later. Since he could not forgive himself, he might have felt that he was not deserving of consolation or even divine comfort. And therefore, he did not actively seek Hashem. And Hashem did not, in a sense, not seek him in return. And thus the Shekhinah did not rest on him until he actually realized the true nature of Hashem's plan 22 years later. Sometimes in our lives, we are faced with terrible misfortunes and seemingly impossible obstacles. And it's okay to grieve or lament, but only for a little while. We must ultimately recognize that Hashem's will is the truth, and that we cannot always understand what it is he wants or what's being planned for the future. I know, easier said than done. So my bracha to everyone is that if you have a little trouble in your life, or you face difficult circumstances, please remember, do the best you can, that there's always a higher meaning to everything, and ultimately everything can heal and be well. Shabbat shalom.